Welcome to the LaSallian Way Online, a digital series produced by Christian Brothers University's Center for Digital Instruction in Memphis, Tennessee. In each episode, we focus on topics in online education and approach them from the LaSallian tradition. St. John Baptist de La Salle created a culture of student-centered teaching and learning focused on transforming the whole person. We aspire to follow the LaSallian Way online.
Welcome to another edition of the LaSallian Way Online. We're happy that you have joined us and happy that you have taken this opportunity to listen to us. I am Dr. Dale Hale. I am the director of the Center for Digital Instruction and the dean of the College of Adult Professional Studies, a new addition. But I'm still the same old guy. Joining me today is two of our instructional designers, Kyle Purpura.
Hi, y'all.
And Mr. Tyler Isbell.
Hi.
Happy to have them here today. Today, we're going to talk about something that is, actually, it's new to me. And so I'm here as a learner, and these two instructional designers are going to educate me on what this means. We're talking today about PBL. PBL. And I've had a difficult time remembering that that's not problem-based, but project-based learning. And Kyle and Tyler are the instructional designers. I'll jump in on occasion, but Tyler, tell us a little bit about what PBL is all about.
All right, yeah. So project-based learning is a student-centered, inquiry-based learning strategy or framework that you use in your classroom to help students learn not through direct instruction, but really through the student asking questions and really finding to answer those questions through investigation, discovery, really piecing together what they know with things that they're learning in their classroom. So rather than being told what to learn, the student is asked a question and they go and they try to figure out what's going on and how they would address those questions.
Tyler, you've had some specific targeted work in PBL. I think I'm more in Dale's camp. PBL was a module during my kind of ed prep, teacher prep at Ohio State many, many years ago. I'm familiar with it in that context, and I have used it on occasion in my own classrooms. But now you've done some specific training in it, yeah?
Yes. So I was actually an early adopter at my previous institution. When I was hired on, we were just a normal 9-12 high school. And in that first year, they approached us teachers and they asked, who would like to try this new model? And I was an early adopter. And we became a new tech school. And really, this model is about in a blended school environment. So everyone had it was a one-to-one device. Every student had a computer. But it wasn't just about having that computer. It was also that they were using those computers to complete projects in the classroom. So I was a PBL teacher facilitator for 6 years. And in that time, I actually was able to kind of, I guess, promote up the ranks and became a instructional facilitator. So I was still teaching classes, but I was also supporting my fellow colleagues in how to use it in the classroom. And I had a unique perspective. The other instructional facilitator we had was an English teacher, and I was a math teacher. So that always kind of surprised someone that a math person would want to do PBL, but I really enjoyed it. And in the last 2 years that I was at my previous institution, I actually became a new tech coach. So that process, I actually had to, much like a student trying to complete a program, I had to collect evidence in my classroom and do some reflective writing and submit that to a committee that looked at my evidence and they would give me feedback. And at the end, I went through a coaching program where I learned how to help facilitate teachers through the PBL process as they were working with their students.
So help me understand more about what PBL is about. So just a little bit of background. I've taught both online and in person. And if I'm talking about a typical traditional class where it is students who, I'm going to make this really simple. So it's students who don't know what I know. So the only way to get them to know what I know is for me to fill their heads with this information that they need to know. But I'm suspecting that PBL is not in that method, you know, lecture transmission to the student who is the receptacle. So what's the difference between PBL and the traditional method of teaching? And it looks different online too. So what, tell me about that difference.
I guess just kind of a broader sense, we're talking about student-centered instruction, student-centered learning. So PBL would be one of those strategies that would fit underneath that camp. And rather than thinking of students as receptacles that are going to receive the information that you're presenting to them, you are giving them the agency and the responsibility to actually take ownership of their learning and to go and try to discover what they need to discover on their own. And the role of the teacher changes slightly. And of course, you may have heard, you know, rather than being the sage on the stage where you are presenting all of the knowledge and understanding and everything that you know, and you're pouring that into your students, you are more of a guide. You're going to step aside your students and you're going to say, hey, what are you working on? And you're going to, and think of a guide. I really like to think about when I go, when I walk around the neighborhood, I don't need someone to show me where to go. It's my neighborhood. But if I go out to one of our state parks and I'm going around a nature path, you know, it could be really easy to get lost and not know where to go. Or I might think it's an easy path and it's actually a very difficult path. And so I might ask someone that knows the terrain to come along beside me and say, hey, you know, you don't want to step on that. You want to go around that. It's okay to step through this. This isn't going to hurt you. Hey, it's the sun's going down in about an hour. We need to turn around and go back because you're not going to be able to see after about 30, 45 minutes here. And so I'm still hiking the trail. I'm still working really rigorously to get that path down that pathway. The guide is simply just pointing the pitfalls along the way and just showing me, you know, these are things that you can do that's going to make your path a lot easier to get down. These are things that you don't want to do because if you do this, you're going to waste your time or you could possibly get hurt. And really, that's the role of a teacher in a PBL classroom. You are still the expert, but rather than just pouring out your information, you're going to kind of guide students in a way so they can kind of discover that on their own. And when you see a pitfall or they get stuck and they don't know what to do, then you can kind of nudge them in the right direction so that they can ultimately be successful.
First of all, that was a great metaphor. Guides are active, and presumably guides can ask questions along the way. You know, I guess, for example, like, well, in this nature reserve, going back to the metaphor, is there anything in particular you came here to see? And the guide would know and then would lead you on the path. So I guess kind of segueing into that, I think it might be tempting and easy for a faculty member to equate the role of a guide to someone that is very much in the background, very much in the back seat and really not, quote unquote, doing a lot. So can you talk a little bit about like what is PBL not?
Yes. So one of the things particularly when I was working with seasoned teachers is they would say, well, I do projects. I do a lot of projects in my classroom. And it's important to know that there's a huge difference between doing projects in your classroom and actually doing PBL. And again, I just love analogies. It just really helps me understand things. And I like food, so I love to use a food analogy. Most projects that people currently do is more of a dessert. It's, I'm going to go into my classroom. I'm going to teach this unit where we're going to lecture. We're going to do quizzes. We might even have a final exam at the end. And then once I feel really confident that my students really know what's going on, okay, now I'm going to use a project as a means to review or reinforce the learning that's already happened. So, you know, at that point, my role really can be passive, right? Unless they have some really specific questions about the project, because I've already done the teaching. They've already done the review. They've already done the exam. Like, unless they didn't do very well on the exam, they know this material and they're just kind of rehashing that as a project. PBL doesn't look as projects as the dessert at the end. It's the actually main course. And so instead of doing the project at the end, we're going to start the unit with the project. And everything we're going to do through that unit is embedded within that project. So typically when a project, the first day of a project, we have what's called an entry event where I'm going to introduce the project to my students. It's really important that that project feels authentic or real. And there's some conversations you can have, you know, does it have to be real versus authentic? Is that the same thing? But essentially, it's you want your students doing something that's meaningful to them and it's really meaningful to their community and to their audience so that they don't feel like they're learning something just to learn something, but they're learning something for a purpose. And after that entry event, students are set out to really address what we would call the driving question, the underlying purpose of that course or that project. And my role is very active then because, like I said, just like that guide, students may think they know and they don't actually know what they're working on. And they need to know what's a good resource to go to. You know, there's a lots of bad resources, particularly, you know, what are they looking into? So it's my job to make sure that they are going in the right path. I check in with them. Sometimes you're a motivational speaker. You know, you're trying to help them understand. Like projects can look big, and so it's about scaffolding and kind of breaking those down into chunkable moments so that they can do that. And a big question that a lot of people might have right now, a lot of questions that my teachers always had were, well, are you saying I can never lecture again? And that's very alarming because lectures are an important part of the classroom. I mean, historically, we've looked at many great speakers and we how can you say that I'm not ever supposed to lecture in my classroom? And I would say lectures do belong in the classroom. You're still allowed to lecture. It's just we're going to change the format, maybe the duration of those lectures or how those lectures take place. And so instead of starting with a lecture and then having the project at the end, we're going to start the project. And then if I have a bunch of students that come to me and they say, I don't understand this concept, instead of calling it a lecture, I might call it a workshop. You know, much like in any sort of industry or career, we have a skill that we need to learn, we go to workshops or we go to conferences to learn those things. And so I would have a workshop where I would have maybe a mini lecture where I would actually I might direct instruct those students in those areas, but it's only after the students understand why they need that lecture.
So that very much a just-in-time lecture as opposed to lecture period.
Absolutely, yes.
So what I'm hearing could cause some faculty some concern, but I think if I'm digging deeper into what you're saying, it's not this. So it's not a free-for-all, so Montessori-ish?
Esque-ish. Both work, depending on whether you're in New Zealand or not.
it's not that method. It's more directive toward an end. So what does, take me through in a very high level, take me through how you come to a PBL class. How do I know that what I'm teaching the student, that that's the subject that they're getting? So you've said you can do lectures, but it's not a free for all. So what is it? How do you design this class? And I realize we have an announcement at the end of this podcast that we're going to talk about, but just back us up from that.
So remember, I'm a math teacher. So, you know, lectures, demonstrations are a huge part of being a math teacher. The other piece would be quizzes, right? So everyone remembers those Friday quizzes in your math classroom.
With great fear.
Yes, yes. And then the big chapter test at the end. And so once again, I'm going to say those quizzes and exams are not gone. It's just they're repurposed in a particular way. And so rather than using those quizzes and those tests as your summative exam, your summative assessment, where it's, you know, you either know it or you don't, and this is going to really impact your grade, I'm going to sprinkle those quizzes and maybe a chapter test at the, you know, towards the end of that project. Those are going to operate more as a formative assessment. So those are going to give me peeks into my students' thinking to see how they're doing in their content learning. I taught in a high school classroom, so we know state testing is so important. Students still are having to do that. So obviously they need to practice taking those more standardized, typical tests. But in my classroom, that wasn't the know-all be-all. Those were just data points that were allowing me to know what's going on, how students are doing. And really, I would turn around and use that data to know, okay, you did well on this quiz. We're going to move forward with this project. You didn't do so well on this quiz. Let's stop and let's look at what you didn't understand. Maybe we need to have another workshop. Maybe we need to do some discovery. Maybe we need to practice. And again, we're repurposing homework. Homework isn't just the thing that I'm going to assign at the end of every class. Homework is really targeted to you. We're seeing some deficits in here, or you're asking questions about this particular procedure. And so we're going to do homework to learn that so that we can go back to that project and move forward in what we're doing.
So it's like it sounds like you're using your traditional assignments to sort of constantly assess, get feedback on how the student is developing in terms of constructing what I would call like intellectual capital, so that they're building that intellectual capital right the way through that project, as opposed to just having the quiz as or the chapter test as a means to an end.
Yes, yeah. And Kyle, you coached, you know how this works. I mean, it really helps a lot of people to really, again, let's move out of the classroom and onto the basketball court. You know, a practice, you might have a scrimmage that looks like a basketball game, but most basketball practices do not look like anything like what's going on in the actual game, right?
That's
so right. There's different bits and pieces that we use in a practice to build muscle, to build procedures, to practice plays, so that when we actually get into the real situation, we can pull from that information, like you said, that intellectual capital, so that we can be successful during the game. And really, that's what you can think about your different activities within a project-based learning lesson. You're finding different strategies, different procedures that you can go through so that when you go back to your main event, your actual project, you're able to move forward with what you're doing. Coaching and engaging with your students is a huge part of PBL. And really what really sold me on this was, instead of spending most of my class time standing up in the front, that honestly made me very, you know, I'm comfortable with math. I'm not comfortable with 30 little faces looking at me. And let's be honest, most of them probably weren't even looking at me or worrying about math. But just that idea of I'm up here and I'm the expert and your success is based on how well I can present this to you. It made a lot more sense for me to really set my students off on the right track. And then that freed me up to move around the classroom and work with students one-on-one, to coach them, to tutor them, or to work with small groups. Sometimes we would have students, instead of sitting in rows, looking at the chalkboard at the front, we would actually sit in pods so I could walk around the room and they were coaching each other. And if they couldn't coach each other, then I was able to go in and step in and say, hey, this is where you guys are struggling. And again, it gives me that opportunity to have kind of on the fly, just in time workshop where I can demonstrate a problem or two, ask them if they have any questions. People are way more willing to answer or ask questions when you're asking two or three people than instead of asking 30 people. And I'm building relationships with those students at the same time. They know that I care about them. They know that I want them to be successful. And so that really helps me be able to get in and know where everyone's at, know that this pod, you know, they're high flyers, they're going to take off. I'm going to have to go in and just make sure that I'm reining them in. They're not doing too much, right? They're overachievers over there. And then I have another pod of people that they really lack some of the previous knowledge that they needed. You know, they didn't do so well in the previous course, but they went ahead and they moved into my course. And so I know that I might need to spend a little bit more time with those students and going in and say, hey, this is some things that you're lacking in, but if you can really master this, then this new stuff is going to make a lot better sense.
So I hear a lot about, in what you're saying, a lot about exercises. Tell me what a project is. Is a project something that is like the final project? Or is, how does a project link with the student learning outcomes? How does that fit together?
It's important to start with your standards, and this is something that's really important to remember, is PBL could be an entire course. PBL could be a group of units in a course, or it could be a single unit in your course. And you'll find a lot of times, in particularly in my math classroom, there was some content that really fits really well into a PBL model. And then for other places, I would have to back off because PBL was the standards were too big for a project that we could really manage. So you start with the standards and you look at it and you try to find something that's digestible from your students. And you look at the amount of time you're going to have to present a project, because you want to give students enough time to be able to work through the project. And you develop, it's backwards design. You're starting with what am I going to looking for from my students? How are they going to demonstrate that they've learned these standards? And so that's where I begin. I would say, these are the standards. This is what students are going to do for me to see that they've learned this content. And then I would develop a driving question. And again, I want it to be grounded in real life as much as I can be. I want to find a community partner, or I want to think of, you know, someone in, you know, what industry, what professional uses these types of skills in their jobs, so that I can set it up so that this project feels like this is something that you're going to use if math, upper maths, you know. You guys want to be engineers. You know, these are skills that engineers might use in a project, in a job. So these are things that you want to do. And then you present that project to them in that way. And then, like I said, everything, all the learning occurs within that project. So students are going to start asking questions. Some of them are about the content. Some of them are about your logistics of your course. And that's all encouraged, because you want, the more curiosity students have, the more engaged they're going to be in the process. And as they ask these questions, and sometimes they need help, that's a skill that teachers want to develop, how to help students ask good questions. Because once they start asking good questions, you're able to pull those lessons, those skills, that homework that you were doing in your traditional classroom, you're able to pull it out and give it to them. I mean, can you imagine someone asking for math homework? I mean, it sounds crazy, but if it's project-based learning and it's inquiry-based and they're asking, well, gosh, I've got to figure out the area of the backyard because we're building a dog pen and I need to know how much area I've got. And you say, well, that's really funny. I've actually got a lesson that I can teach in about 10, 12 minutes on how to find the area of irregular objects. And they're like, awesome. Well, hey, show me how to do this so I can move forward in my project.
Tyler, can you give us some examples about from higher education? You know, so our listening audience may be like, okay, I'm getting sold. I'm getting warm about this. But I'm wondering, like, what do these actually look like in the real world? So do you have some experience with projects in higher ed that have been successful, at least in your opinion?
I've seen some here in our own institution. I've actually seen some components of PBL in some different classrooms. I've seen some of them that were done on ground, things that were being done in the classroom. And I've also seen them in some of our Canvas courses as well. Our engineering program, I've seen where they're partnering with industry leaders in Memphis. And so we've been invited to go into classrooms and be an authentic audience. I love this. We were asked to come in and they told us, hey, you're the layman. You're an educated person, but you don't understand this math equation that these people are working through, right? So they're going to present it to you, and we want you to ask questions because we want them to explain it to you like they're trying to sell it to a client. And so they've partnered with people in Memphis. They were designing, one was designing a building, the other one was working on kind of an outdoor space and a parking lot. And so they were presenting to us all the considerations that go into it. And you think, wow, it's a, you know, for me, I'm like, oh, it's a parking lot. Like I drive into it and leave my car there. But the students were explaining to us, you know, well, we had to consider, you know, overflow, and we had to just consider where the water is going to land and where it's going to go. And if we put this parking lot right here, how's that going to impact the traffic area in the areas around here, which is a huge important, I mean, that's very important in a very congested area. And so they were presented the problem. And again, it was inquiry based. They had to dig deep and figure out, you know, what are all the components and things that I have to consider when I'm building a parking lot or designing a parking lot. And so they had to go out and investigate, ask questions, go back to their professor and say, hey, I don't know if this is right. And ultimately, they were driving their own learning through this engineering project so that they could present it to us, this authentic audience, and then ultimately to these industry leaders. We were kind of the rough drafters, and then once they were, we'd asked our questions and they polished it up, they were able to present that to an actual company and present those to them.
So if I'm an English teacher and I have a relationship with maybe a community leader, and I am aware that they are themselves working on projects to design, you know, or redesign or repurpose public spaces, and I know that they are open to pitches from really anybody about what this space could look like and so forth. And so if I had my students kind of work towards that, that would be a project.
Yeah, perfect. Yes. You know, I actually made this comment in a conversation a couple of days ago. We all remember a paper that was a large paper that we had to spend a lot of time on. And we had that feeling that we were going to turn this paper in and our professor's going to read it and grade it. But then where's it going to go? It's probably going to go in the trash can or in a desk drawer somewhere. And, you know, that's all after all the work that you've put into that paper, you were kind of disappointed that that's all I get out of this. Like, yeah, grades are important, but you know, I'm not going to the university just to get grades. Like, I'm going to learn and to hopefully become a better human being and be able to to have a career in the future. And so your example is perfect. So instead of writing a big research paper, you know, that's just a research paper on something that the student may feel is random. Yeah. Find some area in Memphis where there's a pitch needed, or, you know, we have rich culture, rich history here in Memphis. And so partnering with someone and saying, hey, do you need us to come in and explain something? I saw an example of a zoo. So there was a zoo that was repurposing, that they had a very old website and wasn't drawing a lot of visitors. And so they partnered with the local college, and they partnered with the English program, and they said, hey, we had these, you know, some great parts of this zoo that we want people to come and see. And so these students went to the zoo and they looked at these exhibits, and they would write about the history, about what the animals that they were seeing and the experience they had. And so they were able to do the research, firsthand research, right there in the zoo. And then they turned in their papers, and instead of it landing in a drawer, it actually landed on the website. I mean, talk about a public audience. You know, this website now has the words of the students from this class on the internet. So just makes it more meaningful to your students and way more engaging. And, you know, when you think it's going to go in a desk drawer, some people are really passionate about it, and other people are like, well, who cares? A B's a B. I just need a B to get through this, and so a B's fine. But when you tell them, hey, the whole area is going to be looking at this website and your words are going to be on there, they're a little less likely to be like, well, a B's okay. They're like, well, you know, I want to be able to point grandma and my mother and my friends, and I want to be able to point future employers even to be able to say, hey, look at that content on that page. Look at that copy on that page. And say, that's, I wrote that. And so, you know, now it's something that you can be proud of and something that you could even add to your resume when you're looking for a job in the future.
What you've been saying sounds to me a lot like this is something that works well for traditional classroom. How does this work, or can it work for an online class?
Yes, it's about being intentional. So when you think about the inquiry process and you think about the opportunities for collaboration in a PBL unit or course, you need to think about the tools that you have. You know, a lot of times you can just use the tool. We have Canvas, so you think about how discussions can work. Canvas has a collaboration tool where people can, you know, students can all work on the same document. They can work on the same spreadsheet. They can plan online. Maybe groups need to have synchronous meetings so they can talk through things and work through things. You know, sometimes technology, there's things that we can kind of flip over or we can substitute for. So, you know, things that we did in the physical classroom, we can do online. It just might look slightly different. But, you know, I like to challenge people to really think, kind of flip the switch and think about not just how do I do what I was doing on the ground and how do I do that online, but consider the things that you could only do because of technology. So there's some remarkable tools, simulations, you know, even AI, that some applications that we can use in our classrooms that, you know, if we're all sitting around in the classroom, we can have a really great project-based learning lesson. But when you move it online, think about the impact, the reach that you're now going to have. There's more students that you can reach out to. There's more scope that you can have. So, you know, maybe student choice. So I've mentioned some partnering with people in Memphis. Well, if you're working with students that live in a different city or state, you know, maybe finding ways that they can really look into their own community and they can build things or write things for the people in their own community. And so not only now are they learning your content and learning it very well because they're learning how to use it practically, but now they're actually being volunteers and they're being partners in their own community, even before they've graduated. So again, just giving them a way to to make the learning more meaningful and to work with people that they may someday be asking to have a job from.
You know, so as you were talking, I was thinking in my own classrooms, like, so how could I have done this? And, you know, specifically, I thought about some of the videos that I made. And I think at the time when I was recording those videos, they were very much, at least my headspace, was Sage on the stage. But I'm thinking that, man, those videos could probably be repurposed in the flow of a project when, you know, I know that all my students are kind of working on this project, but I've got this one group over here that is going in a direction. Man, this video, if I kind of presented it to them, I sent them an email and the link, or maybe I even embedded it in my lesson module and say, hey, if you're stuck on this point, take a look at this video, so that I've transformed my static Sage on the stage video into something that is a much more just in time kind of learning asset.
Yes.
And I didn't have to re-record it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And we love that when we don't have to redo things, right? I like to call, instead of calling them my modules in my course, I call it my project briefcase. And so I want students to really think of, these aren't just weeks in a course that I'm pushing through, but rather each of these modules is a specific topic or strategy or skill set that they're going to need to be successful in that project. So that's really a big, huge add-on to your course when students don't have to, you're not bound by time and space. Students don't have to be in your classroom talking to you to learn about the things that you're trying to teach in your classroom. You know, if they're working early in the morning or late at night, they can go to your classroom and they can look up your videos. They can look up the entry document and they don't have to keep up with papers. That was always my problem as a student and as a teacher, making sure that I didn't lose the papers that needed to be kept, right? Everything's online and you have a central location where you can go and you can find those assets at any time, at any point within the project. And really, that's actually a skill that I try to teach my students. Like, it's called an entry event, an entry document, but that doesn't mean that you don't go back to that multiple times throughout the course of your PBL unit. Go back. What was I asking you to do? What were you being asked to create or perform? Because you forget. And you can go back and you can see those things and really get back on track of what you're trying to do.
You know, Tyler, when we started this process, you gave a really neat illustration about a bucket and a friend. Could you share that with us?
Yes. So this is, as a student, having that realization that I had a great high school experience. I took a lot of advanced placement courses, and I'm not going to knock those. I mean, those are important. However, as a sophomore in college, I had a job at the at Residence Life. I was a maintenance worker assistant, and so I would go with the workers to go and make repairs around the different residence halls. And I had a huge realization one day because one of my colleagues, he was actually a year younger than me, he was over there welding. So he was working with his hands. He was actually working a torch, and he was being able to do the things that the workers around him were doing. So these were men in their careers, and he was able to kind of work alongside them. And I'm over there holding a bucket. In fact, I got the loving nickname Bucket Boy because I could carry a bucket of tools like no one's business, right? And so, and again, I had that realization that a lot of the things that I had learned in high school and the way that I was trying to even approach my college education was, you know, I'm just going to learn a bunch of facts and I'm going to stick them on a test. And I'm going to keep my GPA up high enough to keep my scholarships, because that's dollars, that's important. But my colleague here, my classmate, was learning how to take what he was learning and apply it with his hands. And he wasn't even out of college, and he was already using the skills that he was learning in what he was doing. So, I mean, and I think it's important to remember that's what really makes transformational learning, is when you understand that education's more than just grades, and it's just more than checking the dots. I mean, accreditation's so important. I know those are conversations I have with faculty a lot, making sure that we are in compliance. You know, it's another big important word. But at the same time, our faculty wants to make sure that the learning is meaningful to our students, because we don't want engineering students that can take really good engineering exams. We want engineers. And that's really what the idea of student-centered learning and in project-based learning is, assuming that role. Like, even as a student, you're assuming the role as an engineer in an engineering class. And I'm going to think like an engineer. I'm going to solve this project like an engineer. I'm going to learn a new skill like an engineer. And really, before they're even graduating and out of our program, they're thinking like an engineer.
And they're doing engineering.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, this has been really good. Thank you, Tyler, for the work that you've done. This comes also as an announcement that we are going to be launching a course that Tyler has built that is all about PBL, project-based learning. And I want you to know, we all want you to know, that participating in the course will give you some tools that you may not have at this point. It's all about equipping the faculty to do the work that they have desired to do. So it's a good course. I'm excited to see it launch, and it will be launching very soon. Any last words, Kyle?
I was just going to say, and for our non-CBU listening audience, Tyler, in the notes to this particular podcast, we'll include a couple of resources for our listeners that aren't a part of our specific community that they could trace if they're interested in learning more about PBL.
That's good. So, gentlemen, on behalf of CBU and the Center for Digital Instruction, thanks, Tyler. Thanks, Kyle. And we'll sign off.